thank you for joining me here on Classical WMUK. I'm so excited to learn about this new piece.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Chris, I'll start with you. I think this whole idea must have been born in some dream of yours at some point. Would you take us back to the smallest ember of the idea and how you turned it into a reality?
Sure. It started certainly in the midst of the pandemic, as we were looking at programming and what kind of things we could be doing. We were going to do it as part of the Bach Festival's holiday concert last December. And so I started out doing the first movement of the work, and because I knew we needed to do some Bach on that concert. And yet, in the midst of everything that had happened, not just the pandemic, but the continued inequities in our society and the ways that the pandemic has affected communities of color inordinately, unfairly, to white communities, I just thought, you know, I can't do just another performance of this. I'm not throwing any shade on J.S. Bach. I mean, the guy has given us an incredible foundation on which to build this house, but it didn't feel like I was building the right house, you know? So it was kind of an inspiration thing. And I said, okay, I'll do the first movement. We premiered that. And as it started to come together, I thought, you know, this feels like it needs to be more than this. This moment in time right now that we're living, the need for voices to come forward that have been suppressed or have been covered for whatever reason for years, and the need for us as a white community to really look inward and say, okay, why is our industry primarily white, and what is it that we as artists are doing unknowingly often and well-meaningly that somehow contributes to that? And then what are we going to do with this moment now that we have to create something new that is relevant and timely and that really calls us to task on really what Bach was saying in the first place, which was wake up and get busy.
So it started with the first movement. How large is this work? How many people did you have to involve? And how many soloists?
Well, it is three soloists. So they are Dr. Olivace, Lawrence Brownlee, the tenor, and then Kyle Kettleson, a bass from that I knew from Indiana University. And then it was spoken word artists. We can talk about that more later. One of the first calls I made, there were kind of two big calls that were really crucial in this. One was to call Everett, Dr. McCorvey, in the fall before we were even doing the first movement, and to say, all right, you know, you've conducted Bach 100 times, and you're also an activist and, you know, deeply embedded in this work of racial justice. Is this a crazy idea? And that conversation was really, really key. And I'm just so grateful for his wisdom and guidance and perspective in a way that I just, I'm one guy and with a limited perspective. And Everett, thank you for being part of this from the get-go.
Well, thank you. I tell you, I've always, you know, one of the things that I have said to my students and my kids and anybody who will listen to me, I always say, it only takes one. And so I felt like when you presented the idea to me, I thought it was brilliant. And it happened around a time that there was an article in the New York Times that was talking about what symphony orchestras would have to do after we come out of COVID, and how symphony orchestras were going to perhaps have to reinvent themselves. And we were coming out of COVID and we were coming out of a Black Lives Matter movement. And can we just go back to just performing the music of dead white guys? And and so how were we going to make the table more inclusive and the presentations more inclusive? And just about that time, Chris called me with this idea, and I was like, that's brilliant. That's how it's going to happen. We're going to take some of these works that have been staples in the classical music repertory and really change them and reinvent what they are about. And so I think that Chris's decision to do this and his vision for doing this was just spectacular. And then when he sent me the first drafts of what he had written, I was totally convinced. And so I'm so excited that this work will now be available for classical music organizations around the world to look at and look at as a possible offering for their audiences. So it's very exciting.
See, I told you, Everett's just brilliant. Now, the second call, Kara, was to Rhea, because I was like, okay, we have collaborated together on numerous occasions, and, you know, she has an incredible voice to begin with, but also has this way to just reach inside of the heart and soul of a song, and therefore of a person that is watching a song in a way that I just have never experienced before. And so I thought, okay, that's my second call. Soprano soloist, I need Rhea Olivace. And thank goodness she was free. So Rhea, thanks for jumping on board too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was very thrilled at the idea and honored that you know, that you wanted to be a part of this project. As you mentioned before, we've worked well before and on some other projects. And thank you so much for that kind compliment. I mean, as beautifully as, you know, we want to sing as artists, I really feel like that is our number one goal. It is to move people. It is to really do our due diligence in terms of understanding what the composer's intent was when they wrote the song, and to share that with our audience and to move them and to have them feel something. So I was just really honored to be part of this process, and can honestly say that, I mean, it affected me greatly. I remember our very first conversation about it. I was on my way to a doctor's appointment, and I was a little bit nervous about accepting, because I was trying to figure out kind of what my life was going to look like over the next 6 months or so, because I was headed to a prenatal appointment and right now. So that was an interesting conversation, and I'm so glad that that just made this project all the more special, to be able to be part of bringing this project to life, all the while, you know, bringing new life into the world with my twins. And so it just made it all the more special to me to be a part of it.
Brought up the interpretation of text as something very important to you when you take on a new project, take on even a probably just an art song. You are wanting to fulfill the what the text asks of you. Here we have an example where the original text is gone and you have completely new text. How do you approach that? What does that feel like?
Oh boy, Rhea, I cannot wait to hear what you tell her in this part, because go ahead.
Wait a minute, Chris. Okay, well, I will start off by saying that when Chris, he shared the original, just all the text with me, even before we had gotten the music, and he just sent this long document kind of outlining his vision text-wise, and I was just blown away with the way it was organized and the various voices that were represented and just how powerful this was going to be coming together while being set to this music that we know so well and the impact that was going to have, right? And I am a fan of the words. A lot of the words are words that I've heard before from various activists. My family, we're avid readers, and we each are involved in activism in our own little way, from my husband to my teenage daughter to myself. We all find a way to fill that need in us to do our part to contribute to you know, being part of the solution. And so I was deeply moved by the words of both of the movements in which I sang. I sang in movement 3 as well as movement 6.
Mm-hmm.
And my duet with the bass soloist, especially in movement 3, is just so so moving. It's so moving to see and to hear that juxtaposition of what the Black lived experience is in my voice, and what the experience of a white person who feels like they are, you know, that they're an ally and that they're welcoming and they're as open as they can be, and to kind of hear the transformation from beginning to end in terms of where the the basis text starts and where it begins in that journey. I'm particularly I was so moved, it was so cathartic to be able to have a voice, not just that represents the Black lived experience, but also the opportunity for me to share what I felt my experience is as a Black woman, because some of the text does specifically say, you know, and what of Black women, and, you know, how do we feel about them? And, you know, all of the things that they have done to contribute and that no other race could bring such fineness through such fire. And it's just so beautifully and eloquently put. And I was just really impressed with how, you know, Chris took all these different snippets of these very powerful texts and combined them into this particular piece. And yeah, it was just enjoyable to really dig in and to be a vessel for that message.
Well, I think, I mean, you've touched on it right there. It's like Bach gave us this foundation, and then all of these authors and activists that, you know, even when they're just one phrase, like the one you just shared, I mean, what if Black women, no other race could bring such fineness through such fire? It's like, I mean, all I felt like I was doing was calling these things together that just needed to be, you know, called together and brought forward. And I mean, gosh, for the white community to hear that, you know, line in the midst of something where they're used to just hearing German texts, which are, you know, in their own time were moving, but just, it's just such an elevation of I think our consciousness as a community with this piece as to how to really come to terms with the society that we're living in and say, okay, again, where am I, like you said, Rhea, where am I doing my part? You know, where, you know, what's my one thing, you know, one person.
I'm wondering if it's possible to fully hear every line, fully get the full impact in just one listen to this new cantata.
You'd have to be really impressive, I think, to be able to get...
Yeah,
because the layer.
Yeah, that's right.
It really is. It's so layered and so nuanced. I think even with my own tackling of it, there are various practice sessions where some phrases just really resonated with me in a different way on one day versus another. As soon as you kind of are in tune to exactly what the bass is saying in a line that's in between two of mine, and it just strikes you differently. It really is so multifaceted.
I think the one that for me, just to call one to attention that still just fell into place in a truly divine kind of way was as we get to the end of the third movement and Rhea is singing about as Jesus wept on the cross and cried out, "Oh Father, why have you forsaken me?" We also have this line which comes from some unknown poet that says, "For over 400 years, our inaction is the reason they," meaning the Black community, people of color, "cannot breathe." And so right about the same time as she says, "Forsaken me," and Jesus would be giving up his last breath, we have this line from the bass about coming to terms with the fact that we often are literally snuffing the life out of people. And it's just such a powerful moment. And I don't want to be clear. I'm not downplaying nor overplaying, I think, the significance of those two events.
I'd like to list some of the other authors we hear in this new setting of Bach's Cantata. They include Raven de Clark, Audre Lorde, Maya Angelou, Langston Hughes, and Amanda Gorman, as well as parts of religious texts from the Bible and many other influences. They all came together under your pen, Chris. The sense that I get is you had actually lived and thought and worked with these texts and writings for some time so that you were able to draw on all of these influences.
I'm so, maybe it's just this moment, or maybe it's where I feel my passion lies right now, but I just think, I forget which one of the classical pieces, it may have been, was it Creation or Messiah? I can't remember, but one of those that just came together for somebody in a really, really fast way that you kind of look and you go, how did that happen? And I'm not ever going to put myself on any kind of even near the same pedestal of Bach or Handel or any of these guys. I will just say that I think it truly came from being tired of not addressing issues that we need to address, and a passion to do so. And that was all sort of channeled through some kind of divine inspiration, I guess.
I remember, Chris, when you were talking to me about the fact that it was, there were so many things going on in the Black Lives Matter movement at the time, and you expressed a sense of frustration about how can we, as whites, make a statement that would be powerful enough to either move people or move the needle. And I remember that we discussed, obviously the power of music. And then I remember you saying that all of a sudden you just had this flood of inspiration as the text and the music was coming into your head. And I remember that as being very exciting, just to hear you talk about that and how you were looking forward to trying to make sense of everything that was coming into you at that time.
Yeah, it was, I'm still trying to make sense of it, and I think I'm in the community of white, male, cisgender, that tends to get all of the, historically has gotten all of the light shone on them. And I think a lot of this piece for me is about where can we step back and where can we push other people out to be in the spotlight, literally to be in the light, as I think Rhea sings several times in the piece. A lot of it is about making space. A lot of it is about stepping away. A lot of it is about reconciling some of these, some of the biblical texts that that I think for years we have sung in any church, white church, black church, whatever. And we've sung these hymns, and yet they don't jive with the way that we live, or that we work as activists, to really move that needle. And, I just felt like this was an opportunity to do that, and to do it again. Like, I think the beauty of this project is that it has such a wide range of talent on the project. And I do want to talk about Chinike, my UK connection and whatnot in a little bit, but that the work will undoubtedly, because it's Bach, be heard by organizations that have historically been primarily patronized by white people, you know, middle-class white people, who also grew up in the church and everything. And it's still going to sound like Bach. That's the thing. I want people to if somebody just happened to a concert hall and we were performing this work and they saw it, they would just be like, oh, wow, that's still just this really transcendent piece of music that just blew my mind. And yet I also want it to be the kind of thing where if they look at the text and they hear it in context, they go, oh, wow, there's so much truth here and so much work that we have to do to move ahead. And, you know, we can't wait any longer. The line about, you know, for 400 years, come on, like, time is now. I think the last year has made a lot of us uncomfortable in a way that we are now finally seeing that we have to do something. And for this to slip backwards now that we're coming out of the pandemic or whatever, that would be the real travesty if we don't continue the effort.
Well, the pandemic forced you to bring people together, mostly online, I'm assuming, Chris, and you've achieved that with a 17-piece orchestra comprised of musicians of color from the U.S. and the United Kingdom, a diverse group of 20 singers from the United States, plus the three acclaimed soloists. So how did that work?
Well, you know, Rhea could talk for a second. That'd be fun to hear her recount what happened with Movement 6 at the end. Because, you know, it from the beginning, it was always going to be a collaborative art form with my colleagues, Everett, Rhea, Larry, everybody. And so it was always kind of a work in progress. And we got to the end of the process, literally the last thing that we were doing. And we did not get permission to use a major portion of text that we wanted to use and from the foundation that owned the rights. And so I said, okay, we got to pivot. And so immediately I said, okay, we're going to reset this for these different authors. And Rhea, bless your heart for being so willing to record it. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. You can say how many names you called me after I was like, oh, well, let's change this and go this direction.
Well, for the record, I didn't call you any names.
Oh, good. Thanks. Okay.
Oh, my gosh. But I mean, this is, you know, these are the kind of the things that you run into when you're creating art. You know, inevitably, there's going to be, you know, bumps along the road. I was mostly concerned and, quite frankly, a little bit petrified because I had just been really trying to keep in tune with my body. And I'm still teaching my full load at Western Michigan University with my studio, and they're still keeping my singing going as well. And then thinking about how my singing would be affected, or the quality of my singing would possibly be affected, because I'm running out of room to breathe, right? As babies get bigger. And so I was like, oh boy, here we go. We're getting kind of close to the wire here, and I have to re-record these things. And it was a little frustrating. No, that's an understatement. It was very frustrating. You know, when you know what your voice can do, but your voice literally, what it's capable of doing when you're pregnant changes from day to day, it feels like. And so just finding the right pocket and the right circumstances and the right alignment of stars between battling, you know, fatigue and heartburn, and then being able to, you know, immerse yourself properly into the process and just really sing. So it was a bit of a challenge there, but I mean, that's what we do for art. It was way too important for me to back out at that point. It was way too important to me for me to think of any other solution, but just, you know, it has to get done. We have to, it has to get sung, and we have to share this art with the world.
I'm really impressed with the patience it must have taken to fulfill that challenge. Another thing I've noticed about you, Rhea, is you're often saying yes to projects of all kinds, whether they be in music theater or in opera or a brand new piece like this. You do tend to approach things with open arms and say, yes, I can try this new thing.
Well, thank you. It's something that that I think I've been more comfortable doing even much more recently. When I started off my musical journey, I did not start off with the foundation of classical training. I grew up in the Caribbean and had learned everything by ear and sang with my community. My community was my voice teacher. I sang in choir. I have an aunt, Ophelia Olibache Marie, who sings Cadence music, which is the national music of Dominica, where I grew up. And so my musical experience to begin with wasn't classical, but I did fall in love with classical music when I moved to the States for my college studies. And although there's always been, I think, a little bit of a stigma about classical singers singing different kinds of music, I have always found that I have a hard time with people telling me what to do and who to be. And so as I've become just grown into my womanhood and grown more confident as a singer and as an artist in general, that that I was going to choose to be a part of projects that I felt I could do justice to and that I could sing well. And because I've been able to sing in the Caribbean styles like calypso and reggae and soca, but also sing classical music and also sing a little bit of musical theater or pop / R&B or a little bit of jazz, there's nothing, there are no limitations. I've always reminded myself of that, that a lot of the limitations that could be placed on me are those that I allow others to put on me, and I try to reject that notion and really focus on my why. So, you know, why would I want to get involved with a brand new project like this? Well, as challenging as it was, to be pregnant with twins and to be scared about how my body was going to react, if I could breathe well enough to make it through some of those long, beautiful phrases that Bach has written. It also was such a poignant experience just to sing some of this text and think about the world that I'm bringing my babies into, you know, to think about the line that says, you know, for ignorance when allied with power is the most ferocious enemy of justice. And then to watch the news, and it was difficult to watch the news during the time that I was recording this. There were days that I planned to record, and then I made the mistake of watching the news, and I would just sob and be unable to do the recording that I planned for that day. It was really challenging in that way, to know that you live in a world where, you know, you're trying to bring them this message, and you sometimes worry, are they going to be receptive? You worry about what it's going to look like for your children in the next year, the next 10 years. So, again, but, you know, artists I find are always historically at the forefront of big changes like these, around crises, around critical times like these. So just very proud to be in the number with this project.
And, you know, the last number that you sang when we went back and forth on that movement six so many times, I think that's where the technology really worked to our advantage. You know, we had so much time, and goodness, if we'd been in a studio, I can't imagine how much the project would have cost, you know, for everything, not just your part, but the whole putting together of all of this. But that, in this case with you, it really, you know, I think it worked well because we could, you know, we could shift and shape and move things. But the one thing that, the last line that you sing in that, that movement is the rock cries out unto the earth, the time has come for you to sing today. It's a Nathaniel Mackey line. And oh gosh, every time you did it, I thought, oh, I can't wait for the world to hear you sing this.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
Well, you know, while I'm listening to this and us talking here, I'm actually in Montgomery, Alabama. And,
are you really?
Which, yeah, I'm here dealing with some of my father's estate. And but I'm about probably a block or so from the Lynching Museum and about two or three blocks from Martin Luther King's church here. And so I was on a walk yesterday and passed passed the church, and I thought about the line that's in the very last chorale, when justice rolls down like water. And of course, the rest of that is in righteousness like an ever flowing stream. And I will never look at that line the same way after hearing it set to this music, because mm-hmm. it has just such powerful meaning. And then, of course, you end with do justice and walk together. And then, but there's not an exclamation point. There's a question mark.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, how powerful. Because, you know, one of Martin Luther King's constant lines that he would say was, walk together, children. Don't you get weary. There's a great camp meeting in the promised land. And so you are challenging us, Chris, to do justice and walk together. But you didn't put it as an exclamation point. You put it as a question mark, which I thought was really interesting and really powerful.
I hope it is. I hope it leaves people with a sense of this story is not yet complete, and writing the last chapter of it is on us to do. So I'm just so grateful for the collaborators. I wanted, if I can jump, Kara, real quick, to one of the collaborators that helped me get a connection in the UK is really worth mentioning. Her name is Chichi Nwanaku, and she is the founder and double bassist of the Chineke Orchestra, which is an all POC orchestra in near London. And she, for 30 years, was the double bassist for the Orchestra of Enlightenment. She has podcasts. She's just an amazing, amazing artist. And I cold called her because I thought, you know, this just really needs something. It needs something that feels global. I didn't want it to be a distinctly American-centric piece. I wanted it to be more universal than that. And so having some connection to the UK was really important. And I just told her what the project was all about. And she was so gracious. She got on the phone with me 2-3 times by Zoom. She connected us to 6 or 7 different musicians in the UK, talked about her experiences in Orchestra of Enlightenment, about how to articulate these things, found a wonderful harpsichordist. She's just a force. And having that, again, that an extra element of another collaborator that is doing this work, especially one from across the pond, was such a blessing for this project. Just incredible. And then the other thing that came to me that I have to also mention real quick is that in between movements, I really wanted this to be something that had a voice of today, that had the next generation's voice and called them to connect with this. And so in between the movements, 2, 3, and 4, and 5, I think it is, we have different spoken word artists. So one of them was this young woman, Valen Lyric Turner, out of Boston, who I had heard on NPR on, I think it was Fresh Air or something. And she wrote this piece called Bleeding Red, White, and Blue. And it is just a powerful, powerful work. If you can go on YouTube and hear her. Then she subsequently released a spoken words piece that she wrote about race in the classroom, which I thought was also really powerful for those that are in education and how to deal with that. Then we got Candace Lavender, also known as DC, who is a local artist here in Kalamazoo that had been on a TED Talk, talks about education. I found this really interesting duet between a woman named Scout Bostwick and Darius Simpson, who had done a back and forth, she being a white woman, him being a black male. And they do this thing where they switch voices and one of them says the other one's line. It's all so deeply rooted in this work. And I think it'll be really interesting to see what people do when they hear this spoken word. For me, it actually is like glue. It brings it all together. My hope is that it will give it a currency with a new generation that says, oh, wow, okay, I can bring these art forms together, which, of course, is what, you know, Bach was doing in his time in a different way.
Chris, what you've accomplished here is a completely unique creation, a new setting of an old work by Johann Sebastian Bach, filled with visuals, filled with real performances by real people all over the world. But right now, it's a one-off. You can see it online. But are your hopes that this will be taken up and performed by other ensembles as well?
Yeah, that's ultimately what I want for the piece, is that choirs, orchestras across the globe would see it as a new way to do Bach, to do traditional music and honor the traditional roots of these organizations, but also do it with a new lens. And to that end, what we have, what I set up from the beginning with this is, I believe that this is not something that should benefit me. This project should benefit the people that are doing the work in racial transformation, healing, and justice. And so there won't be a rental fee per se to use it. There will be in lieu of a rental fee, anybody that wants to do the work will be required to make a contribution in the same amount as a rental would be to organizations that are dedicated to that. So we are continuing to move the needle. It's not just a performance, but we are supporting those people that are boots on the ground doing the work too. And that's, for me, this would be a real dream come true if 30 different companies across the world, you know, end up performing it, and 30 different racial justice, transformation, and healing organizations get an injection of cash into what they're doing.
Chris Ludwa, Everett McCorvey, and Rhea Olivate, thank you all for giving us insight into this new work. Thank you very much for your time today. We'll leave it there for now.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Clara.